Welcome to The Common Sense Show with your host, Dave Hodges. We discuss a variety of topics here, including the deep state, the new world order, Agenda 21. There is no one, no topic beyond Dave's reach, because as you know, you can't dodge the Hodge.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges. I am the host of the Common Sense Show, and we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. At least that's what we are known for. And we're going to try to live up to that billing today, as our special guest is Dr. John Huber, a psychologist who's going to talk to us about risk-taking behavior. And I have to tell you, you got kids, grandkids, you're not going to want to miss this interview. I know we deal a lot with news and politics, but we all have kids and grandkids, and I think we need to be greatly, greatly concerned with this. But before we join Dr. Huber, let me mention to you that we are brought to you by PrepareWithDave.com. Don't wait until the hurricane hits or the tornado comes. It's too late. FEMA says you guys only have 3 days of storable food. That's crazy. You got to get prepared. You got to have a lot more than that. FEMA says you should have at least 3 months. Now they're saying 6 months. So what do? Go to where the best is, 70% off. 25-year shelf life, can't do any better than that. PrepareWithDave.com. We're also brought to you by Noble Gold, and I just had my pension analyzed. And I recently read an article in the Wall Street Journal that told me that all pensions are going to be at risk by 2030. Doesn't mean they're going to fail, it means they're going to be at risk. So I had mine analyzed by the good people at Noble Gold. They said, you're okay for now. Don't you want to do the same thing, get the same peace of mind? And if yours is not, they can help you convert. No obligation. No pressure. Simply give them a call, 877-646-5347. That's 877-646-5347. Well, Dr. John Huber, he's a psychologist, and he is the chairman of the Mainstream Mental Health, and we'll be giving out that website address later. He's a frequent guest in the media. He's done over 300 interviews, and this is a really important one. This is one I hope that if we just reach one person today, it's been worth what we have done. Dr. Huber, I'm so glad you could join us today. I really appreciate the work you're doing on behalf of our kids and the tragedy that you might be sparing people from in our families. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Well, Dave, thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure, and that's what we got to do, is get out there and talk about all these things and education. You talk about saving one mind at a time. Well, that's what we got to do.
Yeah, sometimes it's one life at a time. And I just look at the crazy things. Of course, you know, all of us, Dr. Huber, when we were teenagers, we look back and we did things and we say today, what were we thinking? But, you know, so I can't come at this with a pristine model and just say, hey, my background is so good, and we're going to straighten you out. But by gosh, I never covered my eyes when I drove. And I'm referencing this teen who crashed her car while attempting the Bird Box Challenge. Tell the audience, if you would please, what the Bird Box Challenge is.
Well, the Bird Box Challenge is based on the movie Bird Box, and Sandra Bullock is starring in it. And it's a Netflix original about some entities. We don't know. They never explain, you know, did somebody uncover an ancient tomb that was full of these entities, or were they aliens from another planet, whatever happened. But they're able to take control of your mind visually. So you, if you look at them, they can make you kill yourself or kill somebody else and then kill yourself and those types of things. So all of a sudden our population starts dropping like flies because they just kind of roam around and make everybody kill themselves. And they find out that, hey, don't make eye contact with them. So people start wearing blindfolds and you know, manipulating themselves through streets and stuff like that. But one of the things that happens as they figure this out is in the movie, they jump forward a few years and they're all still alive and but living with windows all blacked out and everything else. But they go outside and go to local grocery stores and get food, you know, like you talked about. We only have about 3 days worth of food. So they have to keep going out and finding dry goods and stuff like that. And eventually it gets too far away from the walk anymore. So they get into a car, and that car has GPS as well as the, avoidance technology, the little radars, all that tells you when somebody's in your blind spot and you're driving down the road, sure. Stuff like that. So they black out the windows. They don't wear blindfolds in the car. They black out the windows, put newspaper and paint and stuff like that on the windows. But they're using the GPS and the guidance system that is also there to help, you know, you automatically park when you can't parallel park and that kind of stuff. But they're using that, and they're going about 2 or 3 miles an hour, and they're slowly avoiding cars that have broken down and been stopped out in the street and things like that. The Bird Box Challenge, it implies that you would at least be smart enough to say, okay, wait a minute, I have to have some kind of technology to know what's around me. Instead, this young lady put a blindfold on, and now she can't even see her speedometer to know how fast she's going. She wasn't following it to the T, let's just put it like that. Not that it was safe to do that, but that's the whole premise. Eventually in the movie, they get into basically a 3-day whitewater rapids trip that they have to take blindfolded, and they travel down the river, and they eventually get to the sanctuary area, and I'm not going to give the rest of that away for you, what happens when they get there, but it was sparked by Netflix going out and saying, hey, don't play the Bird Box Challenge. You know, we want to tell you it's dangerous. Well, people are doing it, but my question is, were they really doing it before the movie, before Netflix actually said that warning? And I'm kind of jaded. I think maybe it was a marketing ploy, and it worked, whatever happened. But kids should not be emulating these things. I mean, we have lots of challenges, and we can go back to the cinnamon challenge, or we go back to the ice bucket challenge, which was actually manipulated and turned around and used to raise funds for MS. It was a good idea. I liked the way they do it. But then some people did stupid things like putting, you know, buckets of ice into front end loaders and then dropping the front end loader. Unfortunately, people were getting their heads split open by the bucket, the actual metal bucket. You know, do things smart. You know, Darwin is here and real life, and we got to remember that there are no lifeguards in the gene pool. So we have to be careful about what we do, and I think age has something to do with it. I think that idea, I mean, I think all of us at a certain point of our life believe that the rules don't really apply to me. I'm going to live forever. I can do these crazy things because I'm going to be safe. I'm somehow able to protect myself from the odds. And a lot of times we are, and then it kind of feeds the fire until something traumatic does happen to you, and hopefully you don't die, but then it's kind of like turns a switch off, and all of a sudden we're like, wait a minute, it's not a smart thing for me to do that. And hopefully that happens to us. If not, you know, you probably won't live to be too old, but it can be a pretty exciting life at that point.
Well, that kind of excitement I don't need. And like I said, I did some crazy things as an adolescent, but I don't think I did anything quite this crazy. But, you know, to take kind of a side turn and generalize from this, the same psychological forces that get these young people to do the Bird Box Challenge, do you think there are any commonalities with that, why people text and drive?
Absolutely. The commonality is, though, with texting and driving and that type of stuff is, you know it's dangerous, and, you know, some of the insurance polls and studies have shown it's up to 40 times more likely to be in an accident than actually drinking and driving, which is pretty scary. But what we see is that you do it one time, and nothing happens. So now you go, you're more likely to do it again. Hey, nothing happens again, and nothing happens again. And unfortunately, when something does happen, it's extreme because we've gone through and we've been able to get away with it for a long time, and we get hit pretty hard by it, and it's pretty problematic. So we get reinforced for the bad behavior.
We really do. I mean, every time nothing bad happens, it's, well, see, there's nothing wrong with this. It becomes self-reinforcing, absolutely. And I can see why people keep doing it. But it just seems like the teenagers are the ones at most at risk. Now, do we have any data or any information about people in their 30s and 40s and 50s engaging in these kind of behaviors?
Well, yeah, but it's usually predicated with the few words to start something like, here, hold my beer. And, you know, so we have to be cautious with that, and that's kind of a red flag. And most of us have friends in the same age who go, whoa, wait a minute, I'm not holding nothing, you need to stop, you know. And so we should be able to kind of self-regulate that, unless we're all in that stage. Here, let's all do this together, let's just sit them down on the table. Then, you know, again, let's go back to that gene pool.
Well, let's talk to the parents here for a second, okay? So my demographic is 45 to 64. That's my biggest demographic to our radio show.
Awesome.
So, okay, so we've got a lot of parents and grandparents and a lot of parents of kids in high school. So what would you say to those parents that could somehow maybe help them and assist them with getting their kids, let's say, not to be so risk-taking?
Well, risk-taking in general, it's going to be hard to kind of avoid. One of the things that I recommend is make them, and we do this with my kids, they have to pay for their screen time. If they're going to be on their cell phone or on their laptop or on their computer playing games or whatever, they have to pay for that time, and they do that different ways. Typically by something that requires them to not have both hands on a laptop. For example, my son's a second-degree black belt. My daughter plays basketball and runs track, and the more she does those external activities, the more time they both get on their screen time. A lot of times they're too tired then to spend much time on their screen, but they pay for it, and they're learning that life lesson that, you know, nothing is free. You have to earn things. So that's a good thing. But at the same time, it's getting out there and it's keeping them physically active. We know that does a lot of things for serotonin, for blood flow, for
sure,
normal thought regulation. The other thing that we got to be cautious about, a lot of these things are happening because of social media. And my recommendation, because we're not experts on it, we go to work every day and, you know, we might have Facebook and Instagram and one or two other things, but there's literally hundreds of social media apps out there. And there's no way for you to be an expert like your children on it, because your children are seeing that all the time. Their friends are finding things, and they're all showing each other what to do and how to do them. So use the technology to your advantage. And what I mean by that, there are some apps out there that are actually, you know, $1 to $3 a month, and they're really good. Semantic has one. Everybody's familiar with Semantic if you don't want to go by some of these new apps and companies that we don't know. And they monitor your child's phone usage, internet usage, what apps they're using, and they monitor the language. They don't necessarily tell you, hey, they're talking, you know, to their girlfriend in a seductive way or anything like that, but they're going to tell you that there's something up and you need to be paying attention to it. And use that technology. It's there for you. Stay on top of it. Be involved with your kids. I mean, my wife and I, we go up to the high school and people start calling us by our last name. Hey, Mr. Huber. Hey, Mrs. Huber, because we're involved and they see us and we're there. And, you know, it's a pretty big high school campus, but we've been doing this since elementary school. So, you know, we go around and that's so important, because then kids start telling you things and you just got to listen.
Well, Dr. Huber, I'm not as familiar, I'm not familiar with it at all. The app you called Semantic. Is that
Semantic is a company out there that makes an antivirus for regular PCs and computers. But they also make an application for social media monitoring. And you can go on to, you know, iTunes or the app store for I can't remember the name exactly right now, for Google apps, whatever. And you can look at it for Android. and go look at the listings, and they'll have you'll find out that the really good ones have really horrible recommendations because the kids are getting on there saying how evil they are.
That's so interesting. So yeah,
when you so look at read the reviews. They'll start off and they'll sound like, "Hey, this is an adult." And next thing you know, it's like there's a little bit of a rant in there about how, you know, they can't text their girlfriend at 2 a.m. You know, and you're like, "Oh, okay."
Well, that's a good thing. I can tell you. Well, okay, I won't reveal personal secrets here of the Hodges family, but I see what you're saying. Let me ask you: is this technology? Is it keyword triggered? Are we looking for language, for example, that might be indicative of self-harmful behavior? I mean, what does this semantic look for?
Well, I hate using trigger words as a definition. They look at trends, self-deprecation, using negativistic words and stuff like that. You know, it's funny because Facebook and Instagram, Snapchat, they all monitor, and they can see whether people are in a negative mood or depressed or manic, but they don't have rights to disclose that kind of information or anything else like that, but they use it for their own internal data. Well, some companies have come out and said, hey, you know, we can do that too. And they monitor, but not just what's being said, but all the number of different apps, the new apps that come out, the new social media apps that we won't know what they are until 6 months down the road because the kids have been using them all that time. And it's a challenge for adults in general, and, you know, especially grandparents who may not be nearly as adept as the parents are at that. And the kids are so much better at all of these things than we are. It's like, you know, I got a new app, I can't figure it out. I go grab my 13-year-old, here, show me how to make this thing work. And
yeah,
5 minutes later, it's running.
I know that feeling. Well, one more thing I want to revisit here in the interest of parent preparation and dealing with this and being proactive would be what you mentioned here about trading screen time. You get to buy screen time in lieu of how much you go out and exercise and are engaged in outside activities. Is this kind of a token economy? Are you taking me back to my undergraduate training days here, the token economy behavior mod, where you actually set up a system and this amount of time exercise equals this much time of screen time?
But that's exactly what we all live in. I mean, you go to work and you get a paycheck. I mean, that's token economy. So it's more like real life, and we can call it a token economy. That somehow, I think, undermines its value. I mean, my kids, you know, wanted to get on their computers at eight years of age, and we're like, wait a minute, you know. So we changed the password every night to a 12 or 13 digit number, and we would give them a list of math problems. They had to sit down and do all these math problems and do them correctly, then put the numbers end to end to get their password. And that took work. We did it every night. And after they went to bed, but then they didn't come pound on our door, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning, wanted to get on the computer for the new password. They knew the math was right there in front of them, and they just sit down and started working on it.
That's really good. And the context I meant, token economy, that was the term we used in my professional training.
Well, yeah, it
not
is.
Not so much
it
to
is,
be a negative connotation, but I like the approach. I really do. And, let's get to the overall thing here, because, I mean, I have a list here of risky behaviors. Fire challenge, okay. Hot water challenge, choking game, condom snorting challenge, and now, of course, we got the bird box situation. If you were to give the parents listening to this interview a takeaway, what would that be?
The takeaway is know what your kids are doing. Be involved. Absolutely. I mean, the condom challenge, you snort a condom down your nose, and the whole idea is you're supposed to be able to catch it and pull it out your mouth, you know, like they used to show kids doing spaghetti a long time ago. The problem is you snort it down and it goes down your windpipe and you suffocate to death and you can't get back there to grab it. It's disturbing. So any of these things, it's almost, hey, this is all in fun, but they're potentially lethal situations. Even the cinnamon challenge. You get cinnamon, ground up cinnamon in your lungs, it causes permanent scar tissue on your lungs, and you're going to have depleted lung capacity the rest of your life, period. It's sad. There's other challenges, the Momo challenge. The Momo challenge, we know we lost a 12 and a 14-year-old to it because it did data mining on the kid's phone and then threatened them to expose things they'd said and done and places they'd looked at online if they didn't do certain risky activities. And it started out relatively benign. The first one is like, you know, stand out in the mall and yell your name as loud as you can and then keep walking. Well, no big deal. And then a lot of this too is the kids are excited about it because they encourage them to videotape it and put it out on Instagram and on YouTube and Snapchat, and they get more likes. And they, you know, the Kardashians kind of set us up for this, where you're famous for being famous and not actually accomplishing anything. And kids are doing that. I'm a forensic psychologist, and I've got cases right now where I got people who were trying to become famous on Instagram and YouTube and videotape them committing crimes and play it out on the social media and get 200,000-300,000 followers, and one of them ends up being a police officer and they get arrested, and now they're looking at judges, and the judges sent them to me saying, what's wrong with these kids? And, you know, I get notified and I get a call from a kid, and it repeats every time I get one of these. Aren't you excited? I'm famous. You have me as a client.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm
incredible.
Like, well, you're going to go through time. You know, you can snail mail me, you know, a paper and pencil letter when you get into jail, if you'd like.
That is absolutely amazing. Well, let's talk about the work you do, too. I found it really interesting. I spent some time on your website, and the mainstreammentalhealth.org website. And it was really good. You had a whole list of mental illness challenges and so forth. So what is it you do kind of in your day job? Do you just do basic therapy for the conditions that are listed on your site?
Well, the conditions list on my side, we look at this as kind of a starting point. We're not the all and end all of it, but we're a place where you can go. And if you want really good information on, say, borderline personality disorder or bipolar, you go there. Now, I have a practice, and it's a general psychology practice. We do some interesting things there. We are set up more along the forensic line. It's kind of evolved over the years, and now I'm an expert federal witness and all this kind of stuff, and go to federal court as well as state litigation, and testify in different situations for mitigating factors. Usually it's very rarely that I'm involved in the guilt or innocent stage of it, because, you know, the court doesn't care why you did something. They're just trying to see if you did it or not. And then when it comes to the punishment phase, that's when I jump in. I also have privileges at two long-term acute care hospitals where we deal with cancers and infections and respiratory things and chronic illnesses that put you just below ICU level of hospitalization. We do have a couple ICU units on the hospitals, but the majority of them are just below that. And some people there are there for a long period of time. And, well, what's long? Well, typically 3 days or more for most people is considered long, but I've had patients there that were in excess of 30 months. So it can be a long stay, literally a long stay, almost 3 years, or it can be just a few weeks. But that gets depressing, you get isolated, and that's where you need some psychotherapy.
When you look at kids that come from these various backgrounds that do these risky behaviors, have you found any type of specific conditions that actually are more common in them? You know, maybe like bipolar, borderline. I mean, do you see anything, any relevance there?
What I, you know, a lot of these things don't fully manifest themselves until their mid-20s. So a lot of these kids come in, and we may say that this is prodromal. What we mean by that is that it's precipitating and telling us that they're moving towards, say, bipolar disorder or something like that. But what we do see with a lot of these kids is that there's some separation from reality because of, not because of some kind of psychosis, but because their world is limited to the experience they get on a computer screen. And when they go out, for example, and they play Call of Duty all day long and they get blown up and killed and rematerialized 30 seconds later and start playing again, kids lose, especially with what you talked about earlier, that immortal feeling. They lose that connection with the reality of life, and now we wonder why kids 27 to about 16 years of age have a 1 in 5 suicide attempt rates, because they don't realize that it is really permanent. And what can we do to do that? We talk about getting back outside. Well, the research shows if your kids go out and hunt and fish and actually like eat the fish they catch or eat the deer that they shoot, they know that life ends and that is terminal. And unfortunately with that, the data right now for every 100 active hunters we have, we're only teaching 60 kids to be hunters anymore. So we're losing that ground. So
interesting. I mean, it just, there's so much here. And in your spare time, you get about 3 hours sleep a night, it sounds like.
And I do about 6 hours a week of martial arts. And yeah, exactly. I'm all over the place. But I wouldn't want it any other way. I mean,
fascinating.
Yes, it is, totally.
Absolutely fascinating. Well, Dr. Huber, this has been very informative, and I'm in ways that you and I will never know. I'm sure someone's going to hear this, and someone's going to go home, and they're going to start intervening with their child. And if nothing else, they're going to at least be interacting with them more. And let's hope they take some of your suggestions to heart. And I wanted to thank you for joining us on the Common Sense Show. And again, Dr. Huber's website is www.mainstreammentalhealth.org. Great site. Lots of information there that you can draw upon just for the layman. Dr. Huber, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate the opportunity, and you got a great thing going here, so don't give it up.
Okay, you're right, I do. Thank you very much, Dr. Huber.
Thank you.
Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors. Hey, thanks to Dr. Huber for that really interesting report. He is doing great, great, great work in helping parents to understand what they can do to mitigate some of their children's risky behavior. Have you ever heard such a litany of bizarre things? We're going to have him back on and update as circumstances warrant. Well, we're going to go to Paul Martin here in just a moment for a breaking news story out of L.A. with other related issues. But first, I want to let you know this last segment of this hour is brought to you by Noble Gold. And don't mess around with your pension. Don't wait until it's gone before you realize you should have done something. Give the people at Noble Gold a call. They'll tell you how you can use real assets, real, real stuff to back up your pension. Give them a call. 877-646-5347. Tell them Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show sent you. Well, on the newsmaker line with me, we have Paul Martin. Paul, welcome to the show. You sent me an article. I could not open it. I got the gist from the title and from our brief conversation. Tell me what exactly is going on.
Well, we've got this mysterious whatever it is in L.A. with helicopters everywhere and strange aircraft in the sky. You've got troops on the ground. So I don't know what's going on. I put a couple stories up this morning on revolutionradio.org, but we'll just have to continue to see. But I had my longtime good friend that lives in LaPorte sent me a video this morning of a lot of military stuff moving through LaPorte as usual. LaPorte's kind of like the Bermuda Triangle out here for weird stuff. But there were generators and what looked to be like mobile barracks in them. But there was quite a few vehicles moving through there this morning. And, of course, we've been getting reports around the country of large generators, military generators on flatbeds moving around the country. So they're getting ready for something, Dave.
Well, I don't know if you caught this a little earlier in the week, a few days ago to be exact, but I had reported that I was getting eyewitness accounts of foreign troop activity in southern Wyoming. Did you happen to catch
that? Yeah, I got that. Yeah, I got that. They've been, there are a lot of Arabs, the gentleman that sent us the pictures of the mobile vans that appeared to be, you know, getting ready for an EMP. Well, he told me a couple of weeks ago that they've been seeing a lot of Arab types in southern Wyoming.
It's interesting. What? Well, let's back up. You and I have the same source. And last year, I believe in the spring, I published on my website, thecommonsenseshow.com, photos of UN vehicles with EMP-proof communications. And that was later followed up by people sending us stuff that came out of Aurora, Colorado, and then Florida. Same kind of devices. Clearly was indicative of an anticipated EMP attack, but the UN and their contingency forces wanted to maintain communications. Do you think this all ties together?
I can't see how it doesn't. You know, and I posted at Revolution Radio, I believe it was about a week and a half ago, that somebody had hacked into the grid. They didn't do anything. They just kind of waved and said, "Hi, we're here." So, and up till now, I still don't, haven't seen a story on exactly who the hacker was, but the grid was hacked into a week and a half ago.
Well, and then a few days after that, President Trump came out and said he was seriously considering getting rid of all Chinese telecom parts and technology from our grid. Did you happen to catch that?
Yeah.
I see that as being related as well. In other words, the president knows that the Chinese are part of an EMP attack on America. That's how I take it. And the Chinese are aligning with the UN? I mean, are we stretching here, or is this where the logical trail of evidence connects?
Seems that way to me, Dave.
What did your source think? What was his? There's nothing like on-the-ground reports. When you see something, a lot better than seeing it on video or through pictures. What was their take?
He's former military. He really didn't know it, but these apparent, what he deemed as rolling barracks, he had never seen them before, and they were pretty big, probably 35 foot long, with windows on them. So I don't know if they're barracks, prison cells, or what, but we've seen a lot of stuff here in Colorado moving around, but we've never seen these before.
Well, I can give you a logical reason why you'd move barracks. If you needed to have some kind of utility presence, in other words, electricity and so forth, you might have to transport those barracks that have their own internal systems, because an EMP has wiped out what would already be there.
Makes sense.
And it also gives you the flexibility of a mobile command structure as well, too. So if you're taking the fight to an enemy, it's a good way to basically keep the troops housed in the tough part of the seasons there in Colorado and Wyoming because of the harsh weather.
Well, we've definitely been having that.
Interesting. I asked a question of someone who knows about HAARP. And I said, "What's with all the unseasonably cold weather?" He said, "I can't tell you. I'll just say this. The source is not external." I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I said to myself, he's telling me we're doing this to ourselves. Could we be inducing cold weather to prevent incursions or limit the effectiveness of them?
You know, I don't think that that would stop an army or troops or anything like that. I mean, troops trained, we did, even in the Marine Corps, we trained for cold weather stuff when we were in Japan. And I don't think that would stop it.
I'm not talking military. I'm talking less trained paramilitary.
Oh, okay, got it. I don't know, but I've said for a couple of decades, if I was the evil dictator tyrant, if I dropped a hammer, it'd be in the middle of cold weather.
Why is that?
Well, it's just difficult for everything. You know, cold weather makes you want to hunker down and stay indoors and stuff like that. But you're not gonna drop the hammer in warm weather when people are wanting to move and be mobile. You'll do it during the cold weather.
Kind of like the Germans did during the Battle of the Bulge.
Yep.
Yeah, I see your point. It does limit your immediate responsiveness to the threat. But let's sum up where we've been before we move to something else here. Reports out of southern Wyoming from both your sources, my sources, you now have videotape evidence where military structures are on the move. And they, I'm going to guess, they don't appear to be of American origin. Is that a safe assumption?
Oh, you mean the vehicles moving through LaPorte?
Yes.
No, they appear to be American. The tractors look, you know, regular U.S. Army, U.S. military, but the quote unquote barracks or whatever they are, he's never seen them before, and we've seen just about everything in the world moving through Colorado in the last couple of years.
I have eyewitnesses, among them Kathy Rubio, who talk about the Red Dawn training camps in El Salvador and Honduras, in which Army personnel from this country and CIA are embedded in doing training of these cartel terrorist organizations. Does that apply here? Are we looking at Benedict Arnold's?
We could be. Another little deal I found out last night, one of my customers at store stopped by, and his son graduated Marine Corps boot camp about 3 months ago. He came by last night and told me that they're at Camp Pendleton. They're working with British military, going house to house in sweeps, practicing sweeping neighborhoods.
Sweeping for what?
He didn't say, but they're just practicing, you know, going into buildings and you know, make sure there's no bad guys in there. But I thought it was interesting, and he thought it was interesting that what are all these British troops doing over here? And I said, I don't know, but it can't be good.
Sweeping for people? For weapons? Both? See, that's where my mind goes, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah, but they've been at it for 2 weeks.
What I do know is contingency forces at Camp Pendleton have trained to take over California by order of President Trump as they move dangerously close to insurrection. I know that for a fact. Paul Preston knows that for a fact.
I think we're connecting some dots here, Dave.
Yeah, well, the 101st Airborne is also on standby for this operation, too. I know that for a fact. It was told to me by people in California, but also I've got it from a reliable source on my side. So clearly an action on the part of President Trump and his administration is planned for California. But you got to remember, we are dealing with a divided administration. We are witnessing right now, and I published a YouTube video on this, homeless are disappearing into FEMA camps, and the evidence is becoming overwhelming. This really started 2 years ago when California started to outlaw homeless communities in various cities. But really, this surfaced during Hurricane Harvey in Houston. So I went to a DHS source, and I said, are there contingency plans for such things? He said, a country our size, absolutely. She says, absolutely. And he said, it wouldn't be above me to think that some people aren't beta testing this for the real thing, and they're using the guise of a natural disaster so as not to draw attention to it. I've had that information for about 9 months. I haven't done a lot with it because circumstances didn't warrant. But I think the two sides are preparing to do battle. Jade Helm 16, that was rehearsed for right here. Paul, that's my guess. And the winner is going to incarcerate the losers. Maybe I'm seeing things that aren't there, but this kind of starts pulling together things that you know and I know are true.
Well, with all this activity, I mean, it. One thing about military operations is it's kind of like fish in your refrigerator. It only lasts so long, the momentum and the you know, the hoorah of all of it. So we probably don't have. I mean, with everything that's going on with President Trump and the deep state and stuff like that, with everything we're seeing and the things that we're hearing, I wouldn't say it should be too long for, you know, we have a false flag event or God knows what.
There is conflict everywhere. Let's just get away from the military for a second. I'm absolutely convinced that Nancy Pelosi is conducting a political false flag on Ocasio-Cortez. Because Pelosi does serve some corporations, particularly the ones in Silicon Valley, and Ocasio-Cortez wants to kill all of them. And I don't mean maybe literally kill, but I mean kill the corporations. And we're seeing this big divide in the Democratic Party.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, and they got Howard Schultz jumping in, the ex-CEO of, what's that coffee company? Starbucks.
Starbucks.
And he's going to split the Democratic vote over these issues. I have to tell you, Paul, division is the order of the day. And the reason I'm bringing this up, you're saying, Dave, that's really unrelated, man. You've jumped to a whole different track. No, I haven't. If you're a deep state controller and you think Trump is going to move on California and CalExit is really the heart of the resistance against the Trump administration, and now you have a growing divide in the political party you're using to subjugate America, you got to act now.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to act right. Don't you agree with that? I mean, to me, the deep state is being boxed into a corner, and they got to move.
Yeah, like my dad said, most dangerous thing in the world is a cornered coward.
I'm going to have to contemplate what's going on, and then I'm going to have to start connecting dots, because I think we've hit a lot of it right here, Paul. I've got a call into Paul Preston. He'll have these answers. It's just, this is a Saturday, and Saturday is when they do their grievances for New California. And he's hard to get a hold of during this time, but I will definitely reach out to him. All right, let's talk about what's going on in L.A. I've got reports since Thursday evening of extreme military activity in Los Angeles. And I don't mean Pendleton. That's farther south.
Yeah.
I'm talking about in L.A. proper. Helicopters, trucks, generators. What do you know?
I put two articles up on it this morning with some videos of what's going in there. I mean, there's, you know, there's troops on the ground, helicopters in the air.
Paul, you cut out there in the last couple sentences. Can you say that again? Hello, Paul? We seem to have momentarily lost our connection with Paul. And so we are reestablishing with Paul Preston. I mean, Paul Martin, excuse me, as we were disconnected.
I'm shocked we got cut off.
Pretty amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, you fluttered and then you were gone. Yeah, that's what happened when I was talking to Shauna Cox the other day.
Normal day.
You're right, normal day at the office. Well, we got about 6-7 minutes left in this segment, and I wanted to talk about what you know is going into L.A. What specifically are you aware of?
The only thing that I've seen is what's on the videos, but there's definitely troops on the ground there, and a lot of stuff in the air. People kind of complaining about the low flights of the Blackhawks, but. And another, before we get off here, you remember me telling you about my truck driver that quit because a lot of truck drivers are afraid of the credit markets breaking. I mean, they're actually talking about it on their CBs and stuff, and he quit 2 weeks ago. So if the credit markets snap, and we've talked about this before, trucking stops. So I don't know if that has anything to do with what's going on, but if the truck stops, do you want to be in L.A.?
Man, that's a really good point. Well, I have no idea if we've lost our first segment. I won't know until I go back and do the production. So let me say this. If you're listening, and I'm going to include this, Paul... And I have been reviewing the fact that there's multiple video evidences of troop movements in southern Wyoming, as I reported on earlier this week. And thanks to Paul for putting that up on revolutionradio.org. And now we're talking about high federal troop activity in Los Angeles. And I've got multiple reports. And Paul has video evidence of this as well. And we're also seeing a great divide in the Democratic Party. And I think that what we can conclude here is Trump may be getting ready to move, and I'm telling you, the people in New California believe that someday he will. And I can't say more than that because I'm sworn to silence. But let's just put it this way. What's happening is expected. I've thought this was going to happen. This may be Trump's dying gasp in trying to preserve his administration. But this is where we have been talking about here, both first segment, second segment. And I don't know if we'll be able to preserve that first segment or not, Paul, but, I'll have to go back and just look at the production end of it. But I will tell you this, something big is ready to happen. We can absolutely count on that.
I believe so, too.
You've got a lot of people that do shooting out on LaPorte, too, in that area. Are they seeing things on the ground?
Yeah, I sent you a video of it this morning.
Yeah, remember I couldn't open it?
Oh, I'll try to resend it to you.
But describe for the audience what it was that you saw or you had.
It was a lot of military vehicles. The guy that took the video was former military, and they looked to be like moving barracks of some sort, barracks or jails, or we weren't sure, but they were being pulled by American tractors. They're about 35 feet long, and along with generators, and we've been getting reports of generators, military generators moving out of military bases around the country.
Yes.
So
And that would be indicative of an expected EMP attack.
I believe so. And like we, if we lost that first segment, you know, I was telling you that the about a week and a half ago, somebody hacked the grid and just, they just, you know, they didn't act like they were going to shut it down. They just waved and said, "Hi, we're here."
Or it was death.
So I think, yeah.
And, it was a probing patrol, so to speak. What I wonder about the activity, though, I'll tell you where my mind goes in two places. One, they're preparing for domestic insurrection, and the L.A. Government, the CalExit remnants of the California State Legislature, they're about ready to be arrested and taken out of power. That's one. The other is it's going to go the other way, and we know that a massive terrorist event, and I've called them before a Tet Offensive, it all happened the same day for these embedded forces that have been let in through our porous border, and that we're prepared for that action. And along with that could be a Chinese invasion. And the military activity speaks to this. Although I will tell you, all the sources I've talked to talk about it being a domestic conflict, not a world war conflict. Do you agree with that, that it's going to be more, it's probably more likely to be domestic and not international?
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm open to that possibility. The Chinese are going to rush in and join in when the, quote, terrorist offensive that we'll call the second Tet Offensive takes place. Crazy, crazy stuff, Paul. Well, Paul, we're just about out of time, and sorry for the technical difficulties that I think were imposed upon us. I don't think there's anything wrong with this equipment. It's brand new. So, Paul, let me ask you to tell the people how they can follow your good work in about 15 seconds.
RevolutionRadio.org. If you like what I do, buy me a cup of coffee once a month.
Send them a donation. Absolutely. Absolutely. Send him a donation. Hey, Paul, really interesting and timely stuff. Keep me updated, please.
I will. Thanks, Dave.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is Paul Martin, RevolutionRadio.org. This segment has been brought to you by Noble Gold. They can preserve your pension. You need to talk to them because all pensions are supposed to be gone by the year 2030. Give them a call, 877-646-5347.